Presumably, in this meditation, those of you who are not familiar with Joel's teaching about the rose may have lingered on the material values or material appearances of the rose. And those of you who were able to see the rose as a doorway went through that doorway and found you were touching something invisible. Ultimately, touching the infinite. Now, the way we see a rose, whether with the naked eye or with a spiritual consciousness, is the way we read a Bible. And so today, we want to see if we are reading the Bible correctly. Many of us still read it as if we're talking about characters named Pilate and Jews and Nicodemus and Jesus Christ and John. And that isn't the Bible at all. Those are just names. You could take the name Pilate and throw it away and call him Gregory Peck. It wouldn't make any difference. Who was he? What does he represent? What do the members of the Jewish council represent? And then we come to this place now where we can say that the Bible is not about people at all. Oh, they walked the earth, they had forms, they said and did things, but they're not in the Bible for that reason. They are not external people. There's not a character in the Bible that is there for that purpose. Their purpose in the Bible is to show you the multitude of ideas, thoughts, and conditions that exist in your mind. Now take the name of Pilate away. Who was this individual? Pilate was an administrator. Not just an ordinary administrator, but an administrator for Rome, an administrator for all of the material power called Caesar. And where was he an administrator? In the land of the Hebrews, in the land of the intellect. Pilate administrated in the land of the intellect. In you, in your intellect, there is a Pilate. Pilate represents that outer action, that administration in us, which is a tool, which is used. And now, as we begin to read our Bible correctly, we see that Pilate in us is a tool used by both Caesar, world power, and the Jew, the intellect, so that mind and material power conspire to force something in us to act a certain way, so that Pilate in us must make a compromise. And every other character in the Bible is to be seen not as a name, but rather as a mortal power within us, forcing us to do things that turn us away from the divine nature of our being. Oh, there are good characters too who turn us to the divine nature of our being. But every character in the Bible then is no longer to be read as an external person. Some of us have already discarded that old habit anyway. We see Pilate here now in the 19th chapter as a tool or an instrument of two forces. And he cannot make up his mind. He is forced one way and then the other, because he is not anchored in the knowledge of his own identity. All he knows is he gets a paycheck from Rome, and so he has to do what Rome wants. He also knows that the Jews can in some way unhinge him from that job. All they've got to do is to tell Caesar that he's unfaithful to them and to him. And the next thing you know, poor Pilate, who does not know who he is, has to turn around and do things for the Jews that he doesn't want to do. And so you find your inner administrator, that which makes you decide to walk right or left or forward or up or down, the administrator in you which lives today for you and will live tomorrow for you. Who does he answer to? Does he answer to Christ? Does he answer to Caesar? Does he answer to the intellect? Does he answer to the Jew? Does he answer to Rome? Who does he answer to? And if he does not answer to Christ, he's going to compromise. And we can still further clarify whom this administrator should answer to. Because the Jew and Pilate, the administrator in Jewry for Rome, and Rome itself, all represent a material world, totally barren of the awareness of the presence of God within. And if our inner administrator is unaware of God within, we're going to make a decision like Pilate, and 6 months later or 6 years later, we're going to be forced into suicide as he was. Or we're going to make a decision like Judas, who acted from somewhat similar motives on a different scale. And he was forced into suicide. But worse than that, these were visible, ostensible suicides. There is that suicide in a man which is not visible. And now in the 19th chapter, some of the highest teachings take place before the crucifixion to show us that man is daily committing suicide. Pilate, in every man, unable to make the right decision because he knows not himself, goes forth and worships at the throne of matter. And not only that, but the intellect goes right along with him. The Jew turns on the Jew. The Jew turns on himself. The intellect turns upon itself and tears itself to pieces. Don't make the mistake that you're looking at characters in a book. You're looking at the thoughts that are in the mind of the world today, in the religions of the world, in the sciences of the world, in the psychology movements of the world, even in metaphysical movements in the world. You're looking at ideas and thoughts and actions and conditions that exist in the world mind. And they're given names like Pilate and Herod and Annas and Caiaphas. You don't see Herod in the Gospel of John at this point. You see Herod only in the other Gospels. Here Pilate makes a decision. In the other Gospels, Pilate turns Jesus Christ back to Herod. He gets rid of this difficult decision when he learns that Jesus is a Galilean. And he has no control in Galilee. Herod does. He also has had a lot of difficulty with Herod, and he thinks by turning Jesus over to Herod, he can patch up his personal difficulties and also be free of making a decision that he thinks he might regret. Why does John not tell us about Herod? The reason he doesn't is very important, and it indicates why John is so trustworthy as a witness. John was absent when Pilate turned Jesus over to Herod. John was sent to get the mother of Jesus. You won't find it in here. You see, he was taken so quickly that his own family knew nothing about it. And only one disciple went with him, John. Only one disciple was inseparable from him, John. And just as Pilate means nothing as a name, neither does John. But the meaning of that inseparability from Jesus will be clear to you as you dwell with that inner self which clarifies all things. It was John to whom the Master said, "Now fetch my mother. Bring her here, that she may watch me die." And it was John who then went, and it was then that Pilate turned Jesus over to Herod. And John, because he wasn't there to witness that, did not report that, but he knew about it. John reported only what he witnessed. And you will discover that the very Spirit of Jesus Christ directs us to John for the truth. But again, not to an external John, but to John in you. And that should clue you into who John in you might be. We'll begin approximately at the 12th or 13th verse of the 19th chapter. The 12th tells us that thenceforth Pilate sought to release Jesus, but the Jews cried out, saying, "If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar." And so mind is using its pressure against the administrator. Pilate has tried every way he can not to have to have Jesus crucified. Not because he believes in the Christ, but because he's a coward. He doesn't want blood on his hands. He also hates the Jews. He despises them. He hates to do them a favor. And yet, he's forced to do what they tell him. He doesn't want to. And this is the thorn in the side that Paul speaks about. "That which I would not do, I do." Why? Because there is a force working through us, making us administrate in a way we do not wish to administrate. And we cannot identify that force. And so we do what we would not do. We sort of file down the edges a little bit here and file the edges down a little bit there, making little concessions until they become great big concessions. And always the concession is we believe in the existence of matter. As we're pushed closer to the crucifixion, we're pushed closer to the decision we must make. Do we drop the belief in matter, or do we let matter crucify us? We're going to have to make that decision. And then we're going to have to keep that decision once we've made it. Pilate is squirming because he has not faced such a decision. He's unaware that such a decision must be made. He does not know what forces are compelling him to act. Everywhere he turns, matter gets him this way and mind gets him the other way. He's in between. Now the Jews won't let him release Jesus Christ. He wants to. He'd like to leave this town and go back home. They say, "If you do this, let a man go who is no friend of Caesar. What about you? Are you a friend of Caesar?" So this hits him on his weak side again. If he were Christ, he wouldn't have a weak side. If he knew spiritual identity, there would be no weak side. He couldn't be persuaded or influenced. He would be willing to say, "Because this man is innocent, as far as I'm concerned, he is free." When we stand in our spiritual identity, we can face the torments of the mind or the body. We can accept them as conditions which must pass, but which have no power. When we do not stand in spiritual identity, then the conditions of the world around us swarm in. And they have a sense of power compelling us to do that which we do not want to do. When Pilate therefore heard them saying, that saying, he brought Jesus forth and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called a pavement, but in the Hebrew, Gabbatha. The administrator brings in Jesus Christ in a place called Gabbatha, the pavement. And this means a pavement of stones. A pavement of stones, and these stones are literal truth. The truth of the sense mind. Jesus Christ will be judged by the truth of the sense mind. That is the pavement called Gabbatha. There will be no spiritual judgment present. The administrator in us judges by the sense mind. And so today's decisions are based upon what our sense mind tells us. And this leads to a false decision. It invariably leads to a decision not based upon truth. And however right it may appear to be, in time it is shown to be wrong. If a decision in your life is made not based upon spiritual truth, even if you have a temporary advantage, you will discover that this is reversed by later incidents. This is the delusion of making decisions with the mind which is sense-bound. The cardiogram says you have a bad heart. That's a sense-bound mental decision. The Spirit of God says, be ye perfect as your Father. And so the administrator in us, Pilate says, the cardiogram says, I have a severe heart action. And now the rest of us accepts this, and fear begins to sway us. Decisions are now made. And these decisions are all based not upon spiritual identity, but upon material identity. And so the operation finally comes off, and it's a success, and we're very happy. We think we've done the right thing, but we're still just as far away from our permanent self. The purpose now of these characters is to show us what mistakes we should not make, how to avoid these mistakes, how to come to that sense of self which is the permanent self, which is perfect now as the Father. And there are big decisions to make at this point of the path, because if you haven't decided that you have a permanent self and that you are at all costs going to live in that permanent self, you're going to withdraw and be battered and buffeted on both sides by the material world and the world mind. It's only when you have riveted your goal to living in and as your permanent self, not the changing day by day material self, but the unchanging eternal self, the life self. When that is your goal, you find the administrator in you becomes not a Pilate, who ultimately is forced to commit suicide, but the Father who doeth the works. Then you have the divine administrator, the Father within, and grace flows, making perfect decisions, perfect expressions of the divine where you stand. It was the preparation for the Passover, about the sixth hour. He said unto the Jews, behold your king. There is a secret in the Bible here, which we may have spoken of many times, in which people who have no idea that they represent God in some way are used to utter words of truth. You will find Pilate, though he's unaware of it, in some cases here is a spokesman for the divine word. The words are put in his mouth. He has nothing to say about them. Behold your king. What he's saying is really a taunt, a mockery. And yet he's saying the truth, though he knows it not. His hostility to the Jews is now being revenged. He's taunting them with this appearance. They know this man is not their king, and he knows this man is not their king. But they have seen fit to accuse him of saying he was their king in order to get him crucified. And so he turns his taunt back to them and he says, behold your king. Matter doesn't want to do what mind is telling us, and it tries to fight mind. He's now in his own way attacking the very mind which is controlling him. Behold your king. But they cried out, away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, shall I crucify your king? The chief priest answered, we have no king but Caesar. Now we are given an insight into the human mind. If there was one person on earth that the Jews hated worse than Pilate, it was Caesar. If there was one person they feared, it was Caesar. They hated him, they feared him. Now they say, we have no king but Caesar. Caesar is their oppressor. Listen closely within yourself to those words. We have no king but Caesar. The intellect of man says Caesar is our king. The intellect of man says matter is my king. The oppressor of the Jews was Caesar. And the Jews declare Caesar is their king. The oppressor of man is matter. And man still worships matter. Man worships that which oppresses him and destroys him. Caesar represents the epitome of material power in the world. And there's hardly a man on the earth who doesn't worship material power. What destroys man? Material power. The material power of sin, of disease, of sickness, and of death destroys every man, but that's what he worships. He worships the other side of that coin, the good material power, the health. He worships all of the so-called positive side of material power, and while doing it, it's like asking Caesar for favors. The Jews never got a favor out of Caesar. We think we get favors out of matter. Now this is how, at this point, John is teaching us that we commit suicide. Worshipping matter, seeking matter, striving to attain matter, striving to live comfortably in a material world. This is saying, we have no king but Caesar. Where is Caesar today? The man the world feared. A corpse. They were fearing that which would be dead. But they were really fearing that which was dead. The message of spirit is that matter is dead. Matter is a corpse. And when you seek matter, you're seeking a corpse. Even when you acquire it, you've acquired a corpse. This is how we commit suicide daily. And that is the reason this occurs before the crucifixion. The Talmud of the Jews declares we have no God. We worship no man but God. No man can be our God. And now we have no king but Caesar is turning away from its own Judaic God, showing how the human mind can be perverted and distorted under stress. It has no anchor in itself. And as this mind here says, is forced to declare, we have no king but Caesar, which it doesn't mean at all, so do we every day worship at the throne of the material world. Now, if you dwell with this a while, you will see that Caesar represents that which mankind worships and fears. Material power, material possessions, material health, material bodies, material conditions. All that has the capacity to turn and oppress us, we worship. In the 10th decade, only 30 odd years after the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, there were more Jews hanging on trees from the sacking of Jerusalem than you could count. The entire city was destroyed. The same suicide which took place in the statement, we have no king but Caesar, ultimately led to that oppression. Now, throughout the world, we know that the Jews are noted for their being oppressed. This is true. Do you see the vaster symbolism, though, that the mind, the intellect, is always oppressed by Caesar, material power? That's the decoy the mind follows. The oppression throughout the world of the Jews is a vaster symbol of the oppression of material power over the intellect of man. Just as in the days of Jesus, the Jew and Pilate and Caesar symbolized humanhood in its various levels, so it is today. The world ruling power is still comprised of those facets of intellect and matter which are the suicide of the human race. These are facts that never change. They'll always stare us in the face until we come to spiritual identity. Until we stand in the midst of these powers, of the Jew, of Pilate, of Caesar, unmoved as Jesus Christ was. And this is a symbol of standing in the midst of all worldly power, in spiritual identity, knowing that spiritual identity is untouchable. For spiritual identity is the permanent self. Then the intellect, the false sense of world power, will try to manipulate the administrator in you, but the administrator in you will be God. The Father within, unmoved, uninfluenced. And just as Jesus Christ walks through a crucifixion, we walk through the sin, the disease, the death, the bad health, the sickness, the conditions of the worldly mind. The symbolism is very clear because we're reading the Bible now as John wanted us to read it, not with the human mind. It was written from soul to soul. This is the vast panorama which is on every page of the Bible, always with new names. Before the full picture emerges, you are given the strength and the foundation stones so that when you come to the real trial, you know that you have learned how to stand on one fact, that there is no person where you stand. It's easy to say God is all. But what stands on the cross is the false sense of self. And everyone has to come to that place where the false sense of self is put on the cross. There is no person where you stand. The allness of spirit, the allness of God, the allness of divine selfhood is the only you. And these trials and tribulations are all for the purpose of transmuting all that is unlike God out of our system until you are willing to stand on your own divine selfhood as the only self you are. That is your permanent self. As you overcome the feeling of a personal me, as you release the belief in a material me. And before this crucifixion takes place, all of the suffering and torment we go through is because we still worship Caesar. We still worship the material power of the world. We still fear it, and we still try to seek favor from it in some way. I had expected more than a year ago that most of our members in this class would have dropped out. Continuously, we emphasized that Christ offers you nothing in this world. Christ isn't trying to offer you a better human world. Christ is saying that when you look at that rose, learn to look through it. Christ is saying when you look at that person, learn to look through that person. See that every object on this earth is a doorway to the invisible spiritual kingdom. Now, this minute, everything you see is a doorway to infinity. You must cross out that which you see and walk through it to that which you do not see. And you must develop the habit, the capacity to walk through the material world around you, to walk through Caesar, to walk directly into the invisible spirit always. And yet, in spite of the fact that we have repeatedly told you that Christ offers nothing in this world, many haven't turned away. And it may be because it took 8 or 9 years before we could come to face this truth within ourselves. It wasn't done overnight. We had a foundation. And today when we say there is no person, it's still a difficult thing to say, it's still a difficult thing to accept, but it's still as necessary as it was the day that Jesus stood upon a cross. He was demonstrating there is no person here. Pilate couldn't crucify the Son of God. Caesar couldn't crucify the Son of God. No Jew could have the Son of God crucified. Neither mind nor matter nor material power can crucify the Son of God. And this is the teaching that you are that Son. That means no germ, no sickness, no disease, no lack or limitation can crucify the Son of God, and you are that Son. And ever you think you're being crucified, you're saying, I am not that Son. I am a material being. No one can do to you anything except it be the will of the Father. And it is the will of the Father that you be perfect as your Father. These are the issues behind the forms and the conditions that we now see at this particular point of the Bible. Identity being revealed and false identity being revealed. Everything coming into sharp focus for those who have made total illumination their only goal. The doorway which is called a rose, the doorway which is called a river, the doorway which is called a mountain, the doorway which is called a fruit or a pear, or an apple, or a tree, or an animal, or a person, that doorway is only the doorway to the invisible that is there. And standing at that doorway always is the invisible Christ saying, I stand at the door. As you look into the doorway of matter and accept the invisible Christ there, you're crucifying matter instead of Christ. And if you look at matter and see matter and accept matter and know only the matter that you see, you're crucifying Christ. If you see a person, you're crucifying Christ. And this must be seen. When we are not accepting Christ, we are crucifying Christ. When the churches of the world believe in the reality of evil, which is material evil, the religions of the world are practicing atheism. They are saying, there is matter, it's bad matter. We've got to do something about that. John tells us if God didn't create it, it doesn't exist. God didn't create bad matter. And if we've got to do something about what God didn't create, we're accepting it as being there, created there. That's not worshiping God, that's worshiping Caesar. All belief in evil is turning away from the allness of God and is pure atheism. And it doesn't matter who is the atheist, what religion he runs or doesn't run. If he believes in the existence of evil, he is an atheist. And it is best to face it. We can truthfully say that we have most of our lives been atheists. While thinking, we believed in God. But we believe in a God in some form. We didn't believe in God as the only reality of the universe. And that wasn't believing in God, it was believing in our false concept of God. In our skull we had an idea called God, and that's what we worshipped. And so the handful of us who straggled through this and come to the place where we can worship God finally get the message that God that we worship is individual identity. You worship God everywhere you look. for that is the only one who is present. Everywhere you look is God, and you either worship God or crucify God in your mind. Jesus Christ had the fantastic capability of drawing forth two things in this world. First, to reveal divine action, the great, invincible power of the Spirit. And then, having revealed this power is on earth, to reveal the nature of the world mind, so that this world mind, acting through men with names, would turn and crucify its own Savior. We have no king but Caesar. This is the mind of the world expressing through the Jew, through the intellect, in which man would rather crucify its Savior and worship its tormentor than crucify its tormentor and worship its Savior. This is the choice between matter and spirit. If you choose matter, you crucify the Christ of your own being. If you choose the Christ of your own being, you must then crucify matter. One will be crucified, and you make your choice by who you are. If you are a material being, you have crucified Christ. If you are a spiritual being, you must crucify matter. That is the choice we all face. Many of us are ready. Some of us, it would be premature to expect you to make such a choice. You've had to go through many things before such a choice can be made. You can't make it mentally, because your mental choice would have no power behind it. You'd find you'd have to stumble. The only way you could make it is if you know who you are, if you know certain principles of how to live in that choice. And then you've got to struggle. And if you do not have those principles, and if you do not know who you are, to say, I make that choice, would be as futile as 5,000 people stepping up to the podium and saying, I pledge for Jesus Christ. The words won't mean anything. It won't keep a germ away. It's that conscious awareness of the presence of Christ where the flower appears, where the animal appears, where the person appears, where the tree appears. It's that conscious awareness that you walk, move, and breathe in a spiritual universe. It's the conscious knowledge that all around you is the one living life of God and nothing else. And however difficult that may seem, out of the mouth of babes sometimes, we learn that these things that seem so remote from our consciousness at one time or another are not as remote from the consciousness of the young. In this classroom last Wednesday, we had about 20 people. They were students of a high school. Half of them were Chinese, one Japanese, others were American boys and girls. I suppose the age group might have been 15 or 16. They were here with their teacher. They wanted to learn what this was about. And so they said, give us a little talk. And then there was a question and answer period. And the Japanese boy raised his hands and he asked the strangest question I had ever heard. I don't think he'd ever heard this message before. I don't think any of them had, but he said, well, is there only one life then? And I just couldn't believe what I was listening to. We worked 9 years to get across that message, and I don't know what it is was said before, but he just looked at me and that was his question. Is there only one life then? How would a 17-year-old boy who had never heard this message or any message like this, how would he come to the place of asking, is there one life? And being willing to accept such a thing. Now, if you're Jesus Christ, you're not seeing Pilate and Jews and Caesar. You're living in one life. And one life doesn't turn upon itself. It doesn't crucify itself. It doesn't make itself sick or diseased or destroy itself. If you're living in the one life, you're living in that which is immune to any form of destruction. And therefore, anything that appears to you that is unlike the perfect one life reaches you as a temporary condition existing only in the false consciousness. It's just a sign that for the moment you're not in the consciousness of one life. And so you go back into the consciousness of one life and wait for the illusion of such a condition to be dissolved by the Father within. The moment you're in the consciousness of one life, your own identity passes judgment, not Pilate. All judgment is made righteously by the spirit of your own being through grace, and once more the conditions that beset you are shown to be without power, without substance, without law, without divine ordination. I and the Father are one, one life. No person stands where you are. The Spirit of God is there. The Christ is there. The light of God is there. The life of God is there. The perfection of God is there. What is this physical person? It's a cosmic collage of many different ideas and thoughts in the world mind, which we now crystallize into the appearance called form. This, says the mother, is my baby. And this is my baby grown up now to young manhood. There's no mother there, and there's no man grown up to young manhood. There is the invisible Spirit of God. Who says so? God says so. God is not the father of a growing human child. You find many of those under tombstones. God has no human children. God is not the father of persons. God is no respecter of persons. It's time to take God's word, and not the word of the intellect or of Caesar or of Pilate. Now you're fighting for possession of your mind. Either it's possessed or you possess it. Either it's dominated or you dominate. Possession of your mind means you must stand at these opposing forces of reality and unreality. The tree of life, the spirit. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil, false belief in good matter and bad matter. Where you stand and how you stand determines which dominates you and which you dominate. And if your mind is not your own possession, it is possessed. And you will go out worshiping Caesar, even unaware that that is what you are doing. Now, at this point, that issue has been clarified sufficiently so that what follows will only confirm what we have discussed. And it is necessary for you to find that confirmation in the Bible. see that Spirit is leading you to. Not the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, but the crucifixion of your false sense of human selfhood. John walking with Jesus through the trials, through the crucifixion, is a sign that he has attained. In this world, the crucifixion of the false sense of self. Jesus demonstrates it, John records it. They're working as one team. John is the only Son of God on earth when Jesus walks off the earth. And John represents your soul. Jesus represents your spirit. As spirit steps out of the belief in form, spirit can only communicate through your soul. Jesus communicates to the world through John. Christ communicates through your soul. You'll find the age of John is the next age we're going to live through. We've had the age of Jesus Christ, and it will continue, but now there will be a magnification of the work of John. John represents the soul of mankind, the universal soul of man. And unless you find John in you, you continue to live in Pilate in you. John is now designated by Jesus as the Son of God. Jesus calls his mother and says, "There is your son," to John, "and there is your mother." And we are told that everyone who comes to Christ is the son of Mary. Whoever comes to Christ is the son of Mary. She has no human sons. "There is your son," pointing to John. But John isn't her physical son. She didn't bear him in the womb. He is her son because he has accepted the Christ. He has crucified the personal sense of John. He is unselfed. To Peter, who had quibbled something about John, the Master said, "What is it to you if I would have him tarry a while here?" This tarrying is John remaining on this earth when Jesus goes off the earth. For John is the only one who can receive the voice. John is the symbol of your soul, which receives the voice. So the Gospel of John is the gospel of your soul. Salvation is not through faith in a person made into a god. Salvation is not through faith at all. Salvation is through spiritual identity, accepted. And the instrument through which you accept spiritual identity is John, your soul. Your soul takes you above the Jew. John takes you to the place where your soul, receiving the light of the world, removes you from the darkness of matter. Otherwise, the light is in the world, and the darkness receiveth it not. The whole Gospel of John is the Gospel of your soul, just as Revelation is the Gospel of your soul. And living Revelation is the inner self speaking to you through your soul. Then you transcend the mind. Then you come into the unconditioned mind of reality. Then you live in your permanent self, and you're led into the body that is imperishable. Now, these are some of the highlights of this chapter. We'll look at a few more of them. I think we can stay with this a while yet. Important to note is that the chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." Now, this is still true today. We are told that religion still believes in matter and material power. We are told that religions today are worshiping Baal, that religions today are not going to lead us to individual spiritual selfhood. They are preaching faith is the way to salvation, and it isn't. Only your spiritual self is salvation. There's no permanent self achieved after death. The permanent self must be achieved before death, in consciousness, and lived in. "Then delivered he him, therefore, unto them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and led him away." And so Pilate succumbs. The administrator in us yields to the world mind, the material powers of the world, and the individual mind of us is forced to make this action. "Then delivered he him," and so we're delivering now Jesus, we're delivering Christ, "unto them to be crucified, and they took Jesus and led him away." They, the Jews, led him away. The Jew being intellect. Intellect leads the Christ. It's turned around. When we know the truth, Christ leads us. We do not lead the Christ. But you see, this is a report of the condition of the world. Intellect is leading the Christ. It is turned around. That's the meaning of repent. We're turned around, and so we must turn around again. Turn around. Don't lead the Christ like the Jews led the Christ here, but turn around and let the Christ lead you. You see, that means there's no personal self where you are. If there's a personal you, you're always leading the Christ. You've got to take care of that personal self. Instead of letting Christ live itself as you. "I live, yet not I. Christ liveth my life," says Paul. He's not leading the Christ. Christ is leading Paul. Because there is no Paul, there is only Christ. There is no personal self. Now, how do you face such a situation? No personal self. Go back to the rose. It's a doorway. The rose you see today is gone tomorrow. It's dead. The person you see today is gone tomorrow. He's dead. What are you going to do? Wait for that to happen? Go through the doorway. Sure, it's a beautiful rose. It won't be less beautiful because you say spirit is standing there, not a rose. And sure, that's a nice person to have around. But that person will still be standing around. Go through the person. Find the permanent self that is there. So to the spirit. Recognize. Live by. Acknowledge in all thy ways the invisible spirit. Until there's something in you that is rising, the capacity to acknowledge the invisible spirit. John in you is rising. The soul is rising. Until the soul of the world is risen. Until we recognize the invisible spiritual universe around us. Now, we must walk through that rose. We must walk through that person. We must walk through every Pilate, through every power, through every condition. And as you develop and train yourself through this discipline of walking through the material appearance and condition and the material person, by not doing so, you keep crucifying you, who are the Christ. With Pilate, it's 6 years between his crucifixion of himself and his final suicide. With us, it might be 20 or 30, but it's inevitable. If you crucify you, that finally appears in the visible as your death. And if you don't crucify you, you find you are deathless. And what appears as your death is no more a death of you than it was a death of Jesus Christ. The death of you is simply an appearance. If you learn to crucify the you that isn't and live in the you that is, the self that is perfect now as the Father. Now, this is where the difficult discipline is a daily thing. It isn't something you hear in a class. You practice it with every bug you see, with every insect, with every flea, with every newspaper headline, with loved ones and hated ones. You practice it with the fellow who takes your money behind the teller's cage at the bank. You practice it with the butcher and the baker. You practice it with that which stands on your plate for you to eat today. You look through it to the invisible. And then you stand in front of the mirror and you look through that image and declare yourself to be the invisible self.